coming to you from Orange County, California. This is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here. Another episode of the Jug Life Podcast and my most of the time co-host, Majisk Max Montana. That's magical in Swedish.
Okay.
Are joining you today from Helsingborg, Sweden, where we are for the week for IPF Classic Worlds. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Doing really well.
So we're out here in Helsingborg. We have six
girls.
Yeah, six ladies on the IPF World Team for the USA. Already competed in the Masters division. Joanne got second in the 57s. Audria Butler won the 63 Masters ones. Coming up in a day or two, or tomorrow, but a couple days after you listen to this probably, will be Maddie Forberg in the 57 Juniors. And then Marissa Inda, 52 Open. Meg Scanlon, 57 Open. And Kristen Dunsmore in the 72 kilo Open. So got a lot of athletes out here in beautiful Helsingborg. Very, very nice city.
Yeah, very pretty. Reminds me kind of like a Southern California version of Sweden, I think.
Okay.
Kind of like a poor man Southern California.
Yeah, right on the water. It is very nice. So we hopefully are going to record several episodes while we're out here. But we'll start off with a little Q&A is probably not the right term. Because these are not going to be direct answers to questions, and that's really your fault, not ours. We still got to have that episode about how to ask better questions. But a couple topics that the questions did sort of spur for us to discuss are, what the significance of GPP training, how to implement some general physical preparation training into like some long-term planning. So we'll give some specific considerations for both powerlifting and weightlifting in regards to that. Let's just hop right into that. We'll also discuss some different considerations for athletes based on age. And those are the only ones I said?
Yeah.
All right. All right, so just hopping into the GPP, what is it? What's the significance of that to your powerlifting and or weightlifting training? So general physical preparation is going to be physical qualities that aren't specific to success, like aren't necessarily developing the underlying systems of the sport. So muscle size, technique, neural strength qualities for powerlifting, all those same qualities plus the speed qualities for weightlifting. So we first have to kind of think about all potential exercises, every potential physical activity you could do on this really big spectrum with the least specific on one side and then the competition exercise on the other side. Even though we're talking about non-specific training, so not SPP, not special physical preparation, but general physical preparation, if we were looking at that whole spectrum of exercises and say that it's a foot across with marathon running at the left edge and one rep max squat, bench, and deadlift, snatch, or clean and jerk at the right edge, and it's a foot wide, we're really going to be talking about the last 2 inches of this.
So she said.
That's all we've got. But this is going to be training that we're going to implement outside of like direct competition preparation. If you're listening to this, you're familiar with what we talk about for powerlifting and weightlifting, like phasic training. Most of the time, if I'm talking about a 12-week cycle or a 16-week training cycle, I mean that is training specifically directed at preparation for a meet. And Yeah, you can make the argument that all the training you're doing is preparing you for meets, and yes, it is. But this would be training outside of that hypertrophy strength peaking cycles for powerlifting, or you know, general strength and peaking cycles for weightlifting. And this definitely is significant. If you can listen to my Beers with Chad episode. I have two episodes sort of about this topic, and one of them is called My Biggest Powerlifting Mistake. And it was really neglecting more general type of training in the bigger context of annual planning or multi-year planning. So what ended up happening to me there is I would have this really successful training and you know, great training cycle and apply all the principles and all that good stuff, and have a very good meet, but I had, you know, for whatever reasons, whether it's little injuries or just not executing on the day of, whatever the reason may be, you know, I wasn't going 9 for 9. So I'd, like my PR 23, 25, 1,055 kilo total was I went 5 for 8, and I kind of lost balance with this 450 kilo squat, 992 pounds. And yeah, I had these very, very close misses or just sort of unforeseen issues like that, that I knew, man, if I can just put it together again, I have all the strength. I just need to execute a little bit better, and could take that 23.25 into a 23.80 total or something like that. So what I tried to do on a couple occasions was like, all right, I'm going to turn around and do another meet in 10 weeks or 12 weeks. But when you are lifting those type of weights, even though you might not be injured after a meet, you're not healthy. And that's almost like universal for people lifting that heavy of weights. So basically, I'd try and turn around and do another meet 10 weeks later or so, and a couple weeks of training would go well, and then a couple weeks I'd just start to feel too beat up or whatever that, you know, hurt was from the first meet, like less than an injury, but again, just not quite healthy, would start to catch up with me. So I'd have, you know, 3 weeks of good training and two or three weeks of like, oh, this just isn't going to work. And then 2 to 6 weeks of like, fuck this, I never want to lift again. And then eventually I would come back to, all right, I got to get back to doing some training, but I don't really feel like doing powerlifting stuff. So I'll do GPP. I'll do, you know, general kind of fun training for me. So that would be like some stuff that looks like powerlifting training, some weightlifting, some strongman, some, you know, sport performance type of stuff. Dare I say even some CrossFit type of training, you know, aimed at developing work capacity, more general movement patterns, but more than anything, just kind of refreshing my mind and spirit before I got back to more specific, more focused powerlifting training. And I say that was my biggest powerlifting mistake because I was doing it reactively. You know, I was feeling beat up or feeling disengaged mentally after competition, and then having to go into a phase like this for 3, 4, 5 months at a time to kind of get myself back on track physically and mentally, where if I had pre-planned it to know right after a meet, instead of trying to turn around and do very specific training again for another meet, and going through that cycle of good training, beat up training, fuck this, and then GPP training, yeah, which all in ended up being like a 6-month process to get back to hard powerlifting training. If I would have pre-planned a little, you know, restorative GPP block, whatever, and held myself to that, and this is also just kind of a struggle of coaching yourself, I think, sometimes, that I could have made that 6-month process into 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I would have been able to do the meet, even though, yeah, I'm not going to say 23.25 was like a bad performance, but something like a little bit less than what I knew I was capable of. instead of allowing myself to say, all right, we're going to turn around and do another meet right away, rather it would have been, I'm going to stick to my plan. I'm going to take, you know, 2-3 weeks of restorative stuff and then 3 to 6 weeks of fun GPP training. And then, you know, I'll probably feel ready to get back into things. So I could have taken that 6 month process down to probably 6 weeks, I think, and focused on that more general training. So now, you know, as we kind of understand the significance of how or why it should fit into your training, and I think this is going to be the same for powerlifters or weightlifters to that effect, that, you know, powerlifting is three different movements, you know, more or less three different things all the time: squat, bench, deadlift. Weightlifting is snatch, clean and jerk, squats and pulls, you know, over and over and over. It's easy for it to get redundant. It's easy for it to become tedious. And, you know, the best preparation for competition is going to be pretty specific training that's not the most fun thing. It's not the most interesting thing all the time. There are ways, you know, that people train for powerlifting and weightlifting that may be on the day-to-day more interesting, but won't produce as good of a result at the competition.
I think it's important to note too, for those of you listening, the significance of GPP after competition plays a bigger role when the training cycle has a greater peak to it. So in Chad's case, and you know, the more advanced the lifter gets, the bigger they get. You know, as those factors increase and move up that ladder, the post-competition period becomes a more sensitive period, right? You can't just jump into another meet cycle where, you know, Chad's got to take time to recuperate his body. He's got to take time to recover from the stress of competition. And then, you know, I think the mental, emotional, psychological part of it, you know, factors in for everybody a little bit differently, but it's very different if you're, you know, you've been lifting for 2 years and you do a powerlifting meet or a weightlifting meet and you total, you know, you know, 1,000 pounds and you're a 220-pound guy. You know, that's not super significant stress. You might need 2 weeks of kind of easy training to just clear your mind and feel good, and then start a little bit of GPP in the beginning. Someone who's, you know, in like Alyssa Ritchie's boat, where coming off the meet, there's a bunch of things that need to be satisfied, and the use of GPP accomplishes those. And some of those are like restabilizing your body weight because you've just cut a huge amount of weight. You know, resensitizing yourself to training volume because you're basically out of shape because you've been training at such high intensities and such low volumes, you're not really able to start the full training cycle, the SPP stuff yet. And then just getting yourself mentally and emotionally ready to kind of gear up for that really aggressive, really intense training that's going to take place to get you to the next meet. So it's important to remember that post-meet, you know, kind of period is going to be different, and it's dependent on a lot of those factors. So while a lot of people listening to this may not be in the same boat as Chad, you know, maybe not be in the same boat as Chad, you know, there's factors that come into play, and the better you get, the more significant that is.
Yeah, and yeah, again, with the kind of mental, emotional part of things, even though Alyssa is a 4'10", 110-pound woman, and I'm not that, you know, I think as you get to the higher and higher level of sport or have been doing something for longer, and Max, correct me if I'm wrong for, you know, speaking for Alyssa here, but it's like right after she does a weightlifting meet, she doesn't want to do a bunch of weightlifting.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, and it's not that she doesn't love weightlifting or that I didn't love competing in powerlifting or something, but the longer you've done it, like it's just so much more draining mentally and emotionally to do the competition that this, you know, general training after the fact is more important, because you get someone after they've done their first powerlifting meet or you know, first or second weightlifting meet, and they're so gung-ho and fired up and enthusiastic to get back there and do it again. And they want to they want to start training for their next meet the day after their previous meet.
They spend $300 on SBD equipment or Rogue or whatever, Caffeine and Kilo shirts. They're ready to go.
Yeah, and that's all well and good, but so while it's maybe a more significant part of the training for the more advanced athlete to have this general training block, I think for the more beginner athlete to sort of temper their own enthusiasm and proactively include general training, even if it's just for a week or 2 weeks, to allow them to do that and really make sure that they're hungry to kind of get back to the more specific training, I think is a good habit for them to get into.
Do you think a good kind of concept for people, especially in that post, the use of GPP, the name itself is a little bit odd to kind of grasp sometimes, like general, but the idea of like, that's the stage of training where you're training yourself to be able to do the training that is required to do a meet.
Yeah.
It's there's a couple of things you can do with GPP. Obviously, prepare yourself to train for a meet. You can use it to recover from training for a meet. And then you can use it as a way to maintain your physical abilities just enough so that you are not so out of shape when you do come back to normal training. You're not incapable of actually starting it, right? And so it's kind of important to know that GPP is something that's pretty much included in the training program throughout the year. It's just, to what degree is it really showing itself? How big a volume, how big a phase are you doing it? And when is it, when is it important to place it there? You're going to do some kind of GPP stuff throughout the cycle. Obviously, as you get really close to competitions, not much at all. But it's something that is, it's the stuff we all know that we're doing. It's these really basic general type skill things. And for powerlifting and weightlifting, it's essentially the same stuff, from the actual exercises and things you're doing. But it's important to know that there's different uses for it, and it does have very significant impacts, the timing of those phases, right? You're not going to do a bunch of GPP and try and catch up on your training and your ability to train halfway through the beginning of your cycle. It's too late.
Yeah. So let's talk about some specifics about how the general training phase may look. Things that you can include that we like to include in it. For powerlifters, I'd say the more advanced you are, the closer to competition you could do this type of training. So rather, you could have a shorter, like, specific meet preparation. I have guys like Andy Huang, Brandon Allen, down to like 9 week training cycles, because they have, they're so muscular, they have such a long training history, their technique is more stable. They're just not going to need as long a time to ramp up into competition, particularly because like a hypertrophy phase of training for them is almost non-existent at this point, because they're as muscular as could be, given their weight class and frames and everything. Also, the more advanced lifter, when you're lifting extremely heavy weights, trying to do that for 16 or 20 weeks is that much more wearing to the body. So, for really advanced lifters, we could do this type of training up to maybe 10 weeks out from competition. More beginner lifters, they're probably going to want to use a 16 or 20 week meet preparation phase. So this is training that's going to be done outside of this time frame. So when I get questions on Instagram or whatever, like, I'm a powerlifter, how can I include strongman in my training? How can I include CrossFit in my training? How can I include box jumps, sprints, whatever? This is, conditioning, and that's kind of a separate topic almost, but how can I include that stuff in my training? This is the time. This is when you're gonna include it. So things that I really like to include either in my own phase, my own GPP phase, or athletes that I coach, are things that are similar enough, to there's still developing the powerlifting muscles, but in through like different movement patterns, different time domains, different energy systems, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, things that are going to be beneficial to the general preparation in the squat are going to be sprints, particularly if you're a powerlifter or a weightlifter and you want to include sprinting in your training. Stick to hill sprints or sprinting, pulling or pushing a sled.
No overspeed treadmills?
No overspeed treadmills, no flying 30 meters, all that kind of stuff. And you know, if you're strong in the squat, you've got like a big engine, but if you haven't been doing a lot of sprinting, you don't really have the transmission to transfer it very well, but you're at like a really great risk of soft tissue injury. And the faster you run, the greater that risk becomes. And if you run on flat ground, you know, you put your old football cleats on and try and run a couple 40-yard dashes and haven't done any in a while, you're probably going to get a pulled hamstring, and then we fuck the whole process up.
Yeah.
But keeping to hill sprints or sled sprints is going to reduce your output. So you can't run as fast, obviously, uphill or dragging a sled. So you reduce the risk of that soft tissue injury, but you still get the benefit, you know, the physical benefit and sort of fun mental benefits of doing some sprints. So GPP training is a great time for sprinting. You know, the stuff we're going to talk about here, there's countless ways that you can effectively include these things in your training, just like there's countless ways that you can have a good, sound program. You know, we're just giving you the examples of how we like to do it, but you can, you know, figure out more variations for yourself as well. So a simple way to progress, you know, hill sprints in terms of a GPP benefit, where our biggest goal is building up work capacity, means you're going to have to do more 1 week to the next. So, you know, for the hill sprints, and again, big caveats here of what kind of shape you're in to begin with, but doing something like, you know, sets of the first week, you might do two or three sets of six 30-yard hill sprints. And maybe you do them every minute on the minute, or you do them on a set rest period, whatever that rest period is going to be for you based on your fitness levels. So you're going to do six reps with, let's say, 1 minute between each rep, and then 3 to 5 minutes between the sets. And then the next week you're going to do two sets of eight, and then the third week you're going to do two sets of 10, and then maybe take a deload and start on a new exercise. But you're just going to build up capacity from week to week there. I think that's really effective to develop qualities for the squat, as well as different jumping exercises. You know, my preference is going to be box jumps there. If we're talking about developing jumping qualities and speed qualities, I don't love the box jump for that. I mean, it's got benefits, but I much prefer like a multiple, like double leg bounds for distance, or like standing broad jumps, but connect, you know, 2, 3, 4 reps together. Because the box jump, you really only get the explosive quality of the initial jump, or multiple jumps for distance, you get explosive qualities plus reactive elastic stuff, but that's a different topic. But the box jump is going to be good for powerlifters and weightlifters because it's reducing the force of gravity in the landing. You know, you're not jumping up 3 feet and then falling back to earth 3 feet. You're just jumping up 3 feet and landing there. So you're not accelerating towards the ground the same way. So it's going to take some stress off the joints. Similar type of progression. Yeah, maybe the first week you do 6 sets of 3 jumps, then 8 sets of 3 jumps. The next week, 10 sets of 3 jumps. A lot of different ways you can organize it, but that's the idea. Is you want to do more the next, you know, do more next week and more the week after that to build up your capacity. If you want to test how high of box jumps you can do too, that's fine. You know, that's a fine way to do it as well. Maybe you work up to a top set and then do the back, and then I do it like work up to as high a box as you can for the day, and then do 6 sets of 3 after at a lower box, and then build up the capacity that way. It's not a huge difference.
Yeah.
But that's sort of an example of how to include it. Do you have, you know, jumping type of stuff you like to do with the weightlifters?
Yeah, very similar stuff. With some of the more advanced ones, not too early in the GPP stuff, we start, with some lifters start like depth drops, but really, really short heights to just kind of prepare them for what's going to happen later on. But the same kind of thing, just a growth in the extensive stuff first, where we increase the volume of jumps. Box jumps are probably the first exercise done, the most go-to thing, because for all the reasons Chad said earlier, and then we move on from there. But basically the same stuff.
Yeah. So just a quick note about the like jumping progression or plyometric progression for plyometrics is step one is you jump up.
Yeah.
So jump up onto a box, jump uphill. Step two is you jump down. You start on top of a box, jump off, and land.
Yeah.
Teach your body to absorb the force. That's more stressful than just jumping up onto the box. And then the third progression is you jump down and up, like a depth jump, a true plyometric exercise where you drop off of one box, land, and reactively jump as high as you can or onto another box or out for distance, whatever it is. But keep that in mind. You jump up, then you jump down, and then you jump down and up.
Right. You start with double leg too, and then move on to single leg as
for sure.
You go.
Yeah. Those are good things to include for developing the squat. For the bench press, if you have the ability to do it, I think this is a good time for like gymnastics type of exercises to come into play, whether it's handstand push-ups or different work on rings and that kind of stuff. All kind of different push-up variations. And then, if you're a powerlifter and you want to see how much you can overhead press or, log clean and press or axle clean and press or something, this is the time to do that.
I really like the gymnastics stuff too. I'm lucky in that a lot of the people, the girls we have, were former gymnasts, so they're really good at that, but the like handstand stuff and even like the basic handstand progressions for people that are not super competent, it's a really good GPP for overhead lifts because it allows you to position yourself, learn how to position your body or learn how to position, where the bar would be over your head and your body and get that balance correct. But at the same time, it's just, I feel like that stuff makes such a big difference. You can see in the basic qualities of people that were gymnasts, how much better they are at weightlifting movements just because they've spent so much time, with handstand positions and whatnot. But those kind of things are really good. The ring dips and ring muscle up stuff from like, if you're not super proficient at it, it can be really stressful.
Yeah.
But again, like if somebody can bang out 20 ring, muscle ups, then that's fine GPP as well.
And so to that effect, we're talking about gymnasts, but also CrossFitters.
Yeah.
All of our women's weightlifters
are
competitive CrossFitters. But I think there's clearly a trend there that if you have the women's weightlifters in USA Weightlifting who have come over from CrossFit versus the women's weightlifters in USA Weightlifting who have been, only weightlifters, more or less. Let's say, like in Alyssa's case, she did CrossFit for 4 years or 5 years and now has been exclusively weightlifting for 2.5 years. Or Alex LeChance, same type of thing. So let's say that Alyssa has, for the sake of example here, 8 years of combined CrossFit and weightlifting. Four CrossFit and four weightlifting. Versus someone who has 8 years of just weightlifting. These girls who are coming over from CrossFit, even though only 50% of their time may have been spent weightlifting, seem to be significantly mm-hmm. better in the jerk than people who had only done weightlifting. And the only thing that I can really attribute that to is they spent, four of their training years walking around on their hands, doing, AMRAP push presses and AMRAP military presses and as many handstand push-ups as they could and a lot more, you know, GPP for their upper body,
yeah.
And their shoulders specifically. And I think that that's got a really big carryover.
Yeah, very much. I for sure.
And Alyssa is objectively, undeniably, the best at the jerk in all of USA weightlifting.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, she has jerked in excess, 4 kilos in excess of the world record from the blocks.
She doubled the world record from the blocks as well.
Yeah. No other USA weightlifting athlete is even close to doing the world record in their weight class in the jerk. Maybe from behind the head.
Yeah.
Probably not even there. And I think that it's of course attributed to a lot of things, but if there was just one thing that I was going to pick out and say, this is why Alyssa is so good in the jerk and came into weightlifting really, really good in the jerk, is that she'd done hundreds and thousands of handstand pushups.
Yeah.
You know, you can go on YouTube and watch her win these handstand walk races. See her like walking around her house on her hands and picking things up with her feet. But that made her shoulders super strong, and that's only going to be beneficial in the jerk and even in the snatch, just stabilizing overhead. So I think weightlifters definitely want to look at including handstand push-up, handstand walk, handstand progressions the GPP phase of their training. For powerlifters, you know, if you can do that stuff, great. You know, Marissa is one of the strongest bench pressers in the world, and she's doing freestanding handstand push-ups and, again, the gymnastics background and stuff. But yeah, that can certainly be beneficial. If you're a super heavyweight guy, you're probably not going to do handstand push-ups. I do remember way back Josh Bryant prescribing me some handstand push-ups at the end of what was already a brutal bench press workout in the only way that Josh
42 does sets of 42 sets of mechanical drop set dumbbell presses or something.
Yeah, and so I didn't really get many of those handstand push-ups done, but in theory it could have worked. But yeah, if you're a powerlifter, this is going to be the time to prioritize overhead pressing.
Yeah,
whether that's push press, standing overhead press, seated overhead press. Prioritize that over your bench press training because it is more general. And again, trying to develop capacity in it is great, but if you want to see what you can hit on a max in that lift, it's fine to organize it that way as well.
As far as like aerobic stuff, will you include a lot of aerobic stuff for powerlifters early on?
Not a lot. I mean,
I guess relative.
A lot is all relative.
Would you include all of it early on?
Yeah. So you know, the aerobic capacity and the way it relates to powerlifting and weightlifting has almost no role in the competition performance. But having improved aerobic capacity is going to allow you to do more training within a given session, like your per session MRV is probably going to be higher just because you're in better shape. And you should recover between sessions a bit better as well with a stronger aerobic system. So how much do you need to do to effectively, you know, develop that? I think not much is the answer. You know, if you get on the bike or the rower or something for 5-10 minutes before you start lifting, and then have a GPP phase where you control your rest periods to something that's moderately challenging. Maybe the first week or two of the training, it feels very challenging. Like you go on 1-minute rest periods, but yeah, when I was at my absolute strongest, I was doing things in my first phase of training that were like,
yeah.
I'd start out doing like 12 triples in the squat at 455 as a imam, and then I would work that down to, you know, from 12 triples at 455 to maybe 6 triples at 545 or 585, still on every minute on the minute rest periods. And the first week it sucked, and by the fourth week or the second time through a progression like that, it wasn't really a big deal anymore. And even when I switched over to doing strongman, I had good conditioning, but I hadn't done any conditioning. I just lifted weights with controlled rest periods.
I think that's probably one of the most overlooked, you know, I guess modalities to improve fitness is just the density of the training being higher. I mean, watching you do some of the workouts, like back at the old Juggernaut, where you do like these on. I remember one day watching you some kind of sets of four on the minute, and it was just like, I mean, sets of one on the minute is one thing, but sets of four on the minute is an exhausting feat, especially to watch. But yeah, like that's the kind of thing that is probably much better suited than spending hours trying to develop an aerobic base on a bike or something.
Yeah. But if you are going to do some work like that, I've written about this, talked about it on Instagram, all that kind of stuff, like tempo-based training, and this is derived from the idea of tempo runs from Charlie Francis, or even more so the basement tempo ideas from Charlie Francis. But getting on a bike or a rower for 30 to 40 second intervals at what feels about 70% output. So on an exercise bike, that's probably between 100 and 120 RPMs. You ride for 30 seconds, hop off, do some kind of like low level exercise. That could be corrective exercise for whatever you need correcting on. You know, it might be bird dogs and dead bugs and IYTs. It could be just some abs. It could be some push-ups, whatever, just, you know, a small exercise at a small volume, like, you know, 15, 20 push-ups. And then you rest the real way to do it would be to rest until your heart rate is back at the bottom of your aerobic development zone. If you're not wearing a heart rate monitor and don't want to go through all that, which if you're a powerlifter or weightlifter, probably isn't necessary. you just wait till you feel like you can speak in your normal voice again, that you're not, you know, a little bit out of breath, and then you go again. You know, 30, 40 seconds on the bike, hop off, push-ups, rest for, you know, 20 to 30 seconds on the bike again, hop off, abs, back and forth like that. Each one of those being like one rep, you know, maybe starting out at two sets of six reps like that, building up to two sets of 10 reps, three sets of 10 reps. Doesn't need to be overly complex. The way that I do that, I use that stuff a lot for jiu-jitsu now. I just set an interval timer of 45 seconds on, 15 seconds off. So I go jump rope for 45 seconds, 15 seconds to transition to the next exercise, and that'll be like bird dogs. And then I do 45 seconds of bird dogs just at a moderate pace, 15 seconds to transition to the next exercise, which is an exercise bike. And exercise bike for 45 seconds, transition for 15, then IYTs. And I just have a little circuit like that I go through. Has made my conditioning way better. Once you get through, you know, the first couple sessions of it, where if you haven't done any, they're going to feel really challenging.
Yeah.
And it might add a little bit of fatigue through those first couple sessions. But once you're in okay shape, it'll actually serve to reduce some fatigue. So that's an easy way to include things. You can be creative with it. You know, just Google like Chad Smith tempo exercise or something like that, and it's got a lot more info about it. The last thing, you know, would be sort of specific development or general development for the deadlift. This is the time that if you're a powerlifter who wants to do strongman type of things, this is the time to do that. Farmer's walk, single arm farmer's walk, great option here. You're going to develop your grip. You're going to, you know, be picking shit up. So that's going to help your deadlift. You're going to be able to develop some aerobic capacity with this as well. Way I like to include that, EMOM type of work. So, you know, that could be 20 meters with your left hand, 20 meters back with your right hand every minute on the minute. So you do, you know, down with the left, back with the right, rest till the start of the next minute. You could go a little bit heavier with you know, two-handed farmer's walks, maybe 30 meters, go 30 meters, rest till the start of the next minute, and, you know, 6-minute EMOM, 8-minute EMOM, 10-minute EMOM, 12-minute EMOM, whatever it is. That's going to be kind of determined by your own fitness levels, but that's a good way to included any kind of front carries, whether that's carrying a sandbag or a keg. That's going to help out the deadlift. It's going to help out everything, but probably the deadlift a little bit more so. If you have access to Atlas stones or something like that, that can be a fun thing to include in this phase as well.
Yeah. I would say the one kind of other area would be like any kind of like, you'd say like prehab or whatever, rehab stuff, but like unilateral stuff, especially in weightlifting, you see a lot of people with hip dysfunctions or hip shifts, just as you do in powerlifting. But, you know, it's a good time to include a lot of single leg stuff, even single arm stuff, and just things that are going to help you reestablish some, you know, corrective balance to your hips and to your posture, especially in weightlifting. You see people, you know, you jerk with the same leg over and over and over again. You know, you want to address that at some point and have a plan to address any imbalance there. So not necessarily that jerks with an opposite leg are a great exercise, but it would be a good time to do that kind of thing. Or if you're going to do things like split cleans or split snatches as a way to, you know, get likes and follows on Instagram, it's probably a good time for it. But in general, just, you know, single leg stuff, unilateral stuff, and twisting kind of motions, especially because those are things we just don't really do a lot of in weightlifting.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest takeaway from any general phase of training is you have to make sure that you're healthy by the end of it.
Yeah.
You have to start your specific meet training healthy. So, yeah, a lot of those corrective exercises, I guess, could be categorized as general stuff, and this is the time to make sure that you're going into your next phase of training healthy. So hopefully that gives you a good start on some GPP ideas for yourself, for your athletes. Again, I have those Beers with Chad episodes. One is called My Biggest Powerlifting Mistake, and the other one is called Putting the G in Your PP. And you can get some more info about this stuff there. So the other question we got, I think that warrants addressing, was a question about, you know, how does training differ for someone in their 50s than in their 30s? And this is one that I get some variation of quite a bit on YouTube and Instagram or wherever, is, you know, I'm insert this age, how do I change my training? I'm 47 years old, how do I change my training? I'm 60 years old, how do I change my training? It's a very, very difficult question to answer, because that is only part of a bigger picture of understanding individual differences. So someone's age in and of itself does not tell me a lot. You know, just yesterday or 2 days ago, Max and I were coaching in the Masters 1 session at IPF Worlds. I was coaching Max's wife, Joanne, who turns 49 this month.
Yeah.
Max is coaching Audrea Butler, the 63-kilo world champ, and she's 40, 42?
Yeah, 42.
Yeah. You know, Marissa turns 43 this summer. So for us to say, well, you know, they're 49 or 43, you just do the same training as them. That would not be accurate. Because training history is going to be so variable. The older an athlete gets, you know, athlete A versus athlete B, the greater variability in what they've done leading up to that point. So you could get 43-year-old Marissa Inda, who has been powerlifting for 8 years with, you know, 17, 18 years of bodybuilding physique training before that, and 10 years of gymnastics before that. Or you could get, you know, Susie Johnson, you know, other 43-year-old athlete who started doing CrossFit, you know, 2 years ago, did that for 18 months, and now has been doing just powerlifting for 6 months. Both 43 years old, both might be 5 foot, 115 pounds, but there's going to be huge differences in what they're capable of doing. So training background has to be looked at, because you could also take that with athletes of different ages. We could get Dave Ricks, who, yeah, you know, entered Masters 3 this year at IPF Worlds. That means he's 60 years old versus a 30-year-old who's, you know, been doing CrossFit for 9 months and powerlifting for 3 months. Well, Dave Ricks is going to work that dude into the ground. You know? So that's the first thing you have to look at. But the other implication of it is a inter-individual difference, like Marissa at 43 compared to at 40, compared to at you know, 35, compared to 30, compared to 25, and so on and so forth. As that individual athlete gets older, they're probably not going to be able to tolerate as much work. There's going to be some time where, you know, they can build up work capacity and they're able to do more and more and more. And I definitely found this in Marissa's training, that I started coaching her when she was like 37. And from 37 to 40, we were able to add volume and add workload to what she was doing. And the last like two years or so, we've had to start to cut back on that, in part because she was that much stronger. So all the training she was doing was more stimulating, more fatiguing. And that's going to happen with anyone, with any athlete, as they become more and more advanced and stronger, they can't tolerate as much volume. But I think it, you know, age accelerated that process a little bit, or you know, made the how we needed to drop the volume off a little bit more significant. And I'm sure the same idea with Joanne as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's the big one too with age. I mean, you hit it already, is the inter difference, right? When you're 38 versus when you're 50, it's important to understand that, you know, what's going to change for you is most important, not the fact that, you know, that all 50-year-olds train the same way. And yeah, that's very apparent, is that the difference between them is huge. And also the rate at which some people drop off the ability to train, right? Some people may have a really a sharp, like steep drop off where, you know, after they get to whatever, like let's say 35, like their ability to tolerate volume and training drops off significantly, where somebody else may kind of be able to maintain very similar training or need similar training to what they did for the last 15 years, you know, and at 35, it doesn't really change much. It just kind of slowly degrades. So it's just important to understand that as an individual and for each person, it's different, but the principle is the same, that as you get older, the volume and training is going to change as you get older.
Yeah, so it's tough to make very specific recommendations here, but all things being equal, you know, with different athletes, which they never are, but as the athlete gets older, they're gonna, you know, their MRV is gonna go down. They're not gonna be able to tolerate quite as much frequency of overloading training. You know, their per session MRV is probably going to go down a bit. So that's sort of the general guidelines. But as far as specific recommendations beyond that, you really have to be looking at the athlete, because, you know, as we established with Marissa or Dave Ricks or Joanne or whoever it is, like 45 years old, all 45-year-olds are not created equal, you know, when it comes to what they can do in powerlifting and weightlifting. And I think with weightlifting, because of the speed qualities and the mobility and stuff, which that more universally drops off with age, than the general strength and neural force production qualities you have in powerlifting. That's why you have, you know, powerlifters like Marissa, you know, who are right there for breaking world records and winning world championships. Into the even when they could be competing as masters, that does not exist in weightlifting. There's no 43-year-old weightlifter who's battling for gold at the world championships.
There was Krilovich, who was like 40 years old at the Olympics, but he didn't do so hot.
Yeah. So are there any kind of unique considerations you make for your masters weightlifters?
Yeah, I mean the biggest one is their ability to tolerate the fatigue, right? When they add, you know, the biggest thing that changes, because technique is such an important factor, you know, the first thing that's going to change is the frequency of training and the frequency of hard workouts, because you know, where if someone was younger, they might have two workouts in a week that are pretty heavy, pretty intense, and they're able to maintain, you know, quality technique and in spite of or in face of that fatigue. But as they get older, that might, you know, be reduced quite a bit, maybe down to one time a week or even once every 2 weeks, where a lot of that training has to be substituted by, you know, technical sessions that maintain the skill. And so that frequency is the first thing that, that changes with them.
Have you found yourself needing to prescribe like different movements at all? Whether it,
yeah, I think
split stuff or more stuff from blocks.
I try to always avoid the split stuff, just because
I can't wait till someone comes out with the split clean and then squat jerk.
I tried to get a guy to do that at a meet once.
Is that the same guy who did the
Brian?
Complex.
He did the complex instead. He couldn't do a squat jerk, but yeah, I mean, you know, from a completely objective standpoint, it is a viable option. If somebody, it kind of happens with much older athletes. I think once you get over like probably 55, 60, you see people do the split versions because generally speaking, you can split snatch or split clean a little bit more than you could power snatch or power clean. And so it's kind of one of these things where, well, if you're only able to, you know, power snatch or power clean and you can't squat anymore because of, you know, flexibility or old injury or something, or, you know, just not feasible, then, you know, moving to a split variation is probably your best option.
I used to split clean in high school.
Yeah?
Like my sophomore, my sophomore
purposely? Year. Like you were taught to?
No, that's just, we weren't taught really how to do it at all. That's just what happened. I just pulled on it and then that's what happened. But I split clean, I think, like 115 sophomore year in high school.
You know what I have not seen? I'm amazed that someone like Dmitry Klokov has not done this, but the world record split snatch is still only 165 kilos. I mean, somebody's got to just go to a meet here, and like Alasha just needs to do a like 190 split snatch just for the just to be the guy who breaks that record and takes it, you know. yeah, I mean, so split would be the one thing, and then probably a higher percentage of their lifts are going to be powers in general if they are losing flexibility and the squat is that much more difficult. And that's not to say like squatting is hard, so we don't do it. But if squatting is something that becomes really challenging to do and still maintain, you know, sustainability in the program, or if they're just so beat up or it's just so hard to recover from.
Yeah, and that's the idea there is more powers, you know, in a vacuum, if we're making this decision in a vacuum, full lifts are better than powers.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when Max is talking about, you know, the squat being hard, it means like it's gonna be more fatiguing for that athlete. So as you look at their, you know, their volume landmarks for the week, maybe they could do 10 sets in a given range if we do powers, but only 6 sets if they do, you know, if it's all power, you know, maybe they could do 4 sets of fulls and 6 sets of powers.
Yeah.
But if it was only fulls, they could only do 6 total sets or 7 total sets.
Right.
Well, you know, 10 total sets of work is better than,
yeah,
than
exactly.
6 total sets of work. So,
yeah, and that's probably you're talking more like towards the you know, older range there for most people.
Yeah.
You know, 50 plus.
Yeah, and again, weightlifting, powerlifting, whatever, you can't just look at the biological age. Christy Brewer, Team Juggernaut lifter, she's 38. She won gold at senior nationals in the clean and jerk. You know, she was competing. There were girls in that weight class who were literally half of her age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. I feel like there should have been a meme there where it's like the we've got, you know, we've got clean and jerks at home, and it's like Christy Brewer's face like doing the clean and jerks at home, or Christy. And James Townsend too, 35. He's a master's, and he
yes, that
he's a freak though.
When I said that, you know, all master's lifters are not created equal, that's what I meant. When James is shaming the rest of the field, I always feel bad. You know, when they do the athlete introductions, the guys who have to stand next to James.
Oh yeah,
that's just a bad deal for them.
You know, it's, and James is the nicest guy in the world, but there's always two moments in the back room. It's not that James is the best weightlifter, obviously, but it's there the two moments in the back room when probably every guy feels a little bit more insecure is when the first moment is when he, you know, he power cleans whatever weight he's touching, he power cleans it and it's not hard.
It is to watch him lift is the most like shocking thing. It, in the same way that I've been shocked at meets when people do split snatches and split
cleans,
I'm always like, what the fuck? What just happened?
What happened? That's very weird.
But when James pulls on the bar, and that is also shocking, like a shock and awe type of situation.
And then the second moment is when he takes his shirt off to put his singlet on, and everybody realizes that they're really fat. No matter how lean you are, James is leaner somehow.
Yeah.
So yeah, but again, you know, same thing. I mean, you know, Masters, and again, very different than others. I mean, Chad Vaughan's a Masters too, and he was, you know, he's competing and probably doing a tremendous amount of volume there.
Yeah.
Relative to other Masters that category.
Yeah. So if you want to learn more about those ideas, check out the Scientific Principles videos on individual differences. So Scientific Principles of Strength Training, Scientific Principles of Weightlifting, both of those and discuss individual differences there. All my videos on, you know, finding your MRV, finding your frequency, those are going to talk about the implications of age and all the other factors on making those decisions. And we also have a video with Max and Joanne called Considerations for Masters Lifters, where we talk more in depth about this information as well. So, we'll be recording a couple more episodes while we're out here, hopefully doing some interviews and all that good stuff. But if you're interested in online coaching, visit jtsstrength.com. I think we're about 2 weeks away from today to releasing the Juggernaut AI app, which will start out with powerlifting. Power building will be shortly coming after that. Weightlifting coming, you know, probably in the later fall. Super total to follow that not too long after. So for the people who are always asking, are you going to make weightlifting? Are you going to make super total? Yeah, we're going to make all of the ones we have now, with the exception of strongman. I don't foresee making the strongman AI, but they're all coming. App coming out in the middle of June. Juggernaut AI. So go check that out. In the meantime, for weightlifting and super total, we have the club coaching and one-on-one coaching with Max, which you can find on jtsstrength.com. Subscribe to the YouTube, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a 5-star review. Always appreciate that. Helps more people find this information. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, on Facebook, or email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm @ChadWesleySmith, @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.